When it comes to expediting your deals, there are some things that you absolutely need to be aware of, and there are some things that you absolutely need to start doing. My name is Paul Castain, and I'm the author of the YourSalesPlaybook.com blog and your host for the Sales Playbook Podcast. I've personally trained over 20,000 sales reps, sales leaders, and business owners to sell more. So get your playbooks ready because school is now in session. Okay, so before we get down to business, I have a brand spanking new freebie for you. And it's designed to help you stay top of mind with your clients. And I've designed it as kind of a downloadable workbook. It's only 10 pages. It's not going to take you forever to do it. But I designed it as a workbook so that you can, first of all, come up with at least 33 different ways to keep your name in front of your clients without calling to check in or sounding like everybody else out there. But I'll let you in on a little secret, right? It's not going to be a secret after this. But my average client, when they go through this same thing that I'm going to take you through, my average client actually comes up with over 100 different ways to be able to stay in touch without the dreaded calling to check in or anything else. Now, some of you who have been around for a while and you've been listening to me for a while, you might say, wow, this sounds like exactly what you offered a while ago. Very, very similar. I've done two things to it. I've added a few things to it. And also, I sent it out to the graphic designers and had them do a much needed facelift. So if you guys want to snatch your free copy, I would suggest that you go to yoursalesplaybook.com/top of mind. yoursalesplaybook.com/top of mind. So today we're going to be talking about how you can expedite your sales, which, I mean, if we're being real honest here, folks, this time of year, September, one of the things I always talk about is just like how dangerous it is, right? It's a time of year where we really have to keep the momentum going, because if we don't, then next thing you know, it's November. And what happens in November is, at least here in the U.S., we have a little thing called Thanksgiving. Now, Thanksgiving can be kind of misleading because you kind of think it's like, well, it's a four-day weekend, right? We all need to recharge. Absolutely right. But it's really not a four-day weekend, is it? If you think about it, don't we lose time kind of a few days leading into Thanksgiving, a few days after, with people saying, you know, call me back after Thanksgiving, and people mentally checking out, and people kind of, you know, just kind of dragging their feet. But then afterwards, what do we have? We have the holidays, like right there waving at us. And sometimes it's right after Thanksgiving it begins with that mental holiday checkout and the excuses and stalls. Yeah, call me back after the holidays in January. It can start right after Thanksgiving, but certainly by like the second week in December, man, we're going at it full force. So we definitely want to get some momentum going right now while we can. And it just never hurts any time of year to expedite our deals. So I had mentioned before that we're going to talk about something, like, first of all, something that you need to be aware of that might be getting in the way of you expediting your deals. And then I'm going to talk about a few things that you can do. So the thing that you need to be aware of, and you're going to say, duh, but when you really step back, you might realize, well, yeah, I'm aware of it, but like, what am I doing about it, right? So there is a serious trust issue when it comes to salespeople, right? I mean, wow, this is why Castain makes the big bucks, man. He tells us stuff we have never heard before. Like, I can't be the first person who's ever told you that. That can't be a shock to you that people distrust us as a profession. In fact, there's all kinds of things out there in terms of studies, and HubSpot did one. And I've cited this study several times. HubSpot found that only 3% of the people they surveyed consider salespeople trustworthy. Let me say that again. HubSpot found that only 3% of the people they surveyed consider salespeople trustworthy. Now, you know, forgive me for having kind of a potato-patata moment with you here, but that means like 97% think we're completely full of it. They just don't trust us. And the funniest thing about it is you've known this. I mean, you know, not only do we know that people don't trust us, we don't even trust other salespeople. I mean, you know, did you fully trust the person when you went to look for, like, that new car? When you go, like, into a store and they say, can I help you? You say, yeah, sure. Or do you say, yeah, I'm just looking. Just, like, you know, until you get the lay of the land and you kind of observe the other salesperson in their natural habitat just to make sure they're not a predator. I don't know. But it's there, and we've always known it's been there. So as much as you might say, Doug Hastain, you're not giving me anything new here. The million-dollar question, and I really believe it could be a million-dollar question because it might be costing you $1 million here, is what are you doing about it? So the first thing is going to be a gloss-over suggestion. And the reason why it has to be a gloss-over suggestion is because if you've been listening to me for a while, the minute I say what this is, you're going to give me an eye roll. Even though I can't see it, I know you're going to do it. In fact, I would be disappointed in you guys if you didn't give me a good old-fashioned eye roll for regurgitating something that, like, I am just always saying here. So the first way that we establish crust, or, you know, like trust maybe might be better than crust. Hey, look, man, if you can establish crust and get the deal, God bless you. But today we're going to be talking about establishing trust is, you know, you need to use evidence. And evidence consists of things that we use to help eliminate and diminish, at the very least diminish, this distrust, right? We want to eliminate that. We want to eliminate people just kind of being skeptical. We want to hopefully, you know, eliminate or at least diminish the amount of objections that we're getting. And evidence consists of all different types of things. It could be, you know, a good demonstration so that people can see your widget in action. It could be the use of samples. It could be using good, solid, specific examples and facts. It could be using case studies and testimonials, even using context for them so that when you're making a statement and then you're putting it into, like, a context so they truly understand, you know, the cost of something, or they understand the cost of not doing something. You put it into that context. So now that's the gloss over part. Right there, that's still not what I planned on talking to you about today. That's just to kind of give us a basis to move forward. What I want to talk about today is the use of very specific forms of evidence. We've never talked about this before in my podcast. I've never talked about it in any of the courses that I offer. So this is really kind of like some really fresh material that I want to get out for you guys today. So I've got, I don't know, like maybe four or five things. Hopefully this will be a much briefer podcast today. So let's kind of just dig in and see where we end up with this. So whenever you're sharing a statistic or a study with someone, always cite your source. Again, in fact, let me say this again. Whenever you're sharing a statistic or a study, you always want to cite the source. Now, there's so many people out there, and I bet you come across this too, and heck, you know, if you know, you take a good hard look in the mirror, you might realize that you're doing this too. But I notice a lot of people out there love to say things like, studies have shown. What does that mean? Because to me, when you make a statement like that, you know, you could be just like pulling that information out of your rear end. I mean, seriously, you could be making it up to serve your agenda. And if people already have a natural distrust toward a salesperson, I think you're fueling that fire by making statements like that. Or maybe, you know, I'll hear some people say, and this, by the way, this isn't just salespeople. I see this with a lot of content. I see this with a lot of the thought leadership that's out there. And to, you know, have complete disclosure here, I've done it myself. You know, I'm like you guys, I'm a work in progress. And, you know, we'll see people and we'll come across people who say things like, according to recent studies. But now, what if you change that? And, you know, if you were to, like, put these things side by side, you know, studies have shown, or, you know, according to recent studies versus According to a study done by the DMA, according to a study facilitated by Epsilon, according to Dr. Piers Steele at the University of Calgary, right? What do you think? I mean, you know, is there more legitimacy to citing the source? So again, number one, we want to use evidence. Evidence is there to eliminate and reduce doubt, skepticism, and objections. And objections in the best possible way, getting ahead of the objection before it ever, like, is articulated. Well, it's just kind of like just like that little spark, right? We don't want to get it to the point where it's like a bonfire and then they're expressing it or just ghosting us and just like, you know, there they are, just like never getting back to us. So, you know, just to give you an example of this, do you guys notice that at the beginning of this whole thing today, right, just a few minutes ago, maybe 8, 9, 10 minutes ago, when I started off and I had mentioned how there's a little bit of an issue where we're not trusted, when I cited this 3% consider salespeople trustworthy, did you notice that I said, according to HubSpot? So again, practicing what I preach here, it just packs a lot more punch. Now, you know, when you do things like that, you're going to come across as more trustworthy, okay? So that's the first thing that I want you to do. So whenever you're like sharing any kind of facts or statistics or studies, cite the source. Number two, several things that I want you to consider. I'm going to invent my own like Uncle Paul language, I think, all right? Because I will never edit any of this out. You get me, folks, warts and all. But when it comes to testimonials, there are a few different things that I want you to think about. So one of the things is a repeat message that I've mentioned many, many times. Most testimonials work against a sales rep. How? Because they do things that make people distrust them more. Almost like what we were talking about before, when you're saying things like recent studies have shown whatever. In other words, you don't know where you got that from. You could be inventing it. Same thing here with testimonials. We'll see a lot of testimonials that say these wonderful things about the company. And then when we look to see, okay, so who has written this testimonial? It'll be something like Frank B. Or, I mean, you know, somebody who should know better, one of my competitors, and he's not the only one. I don't want you to think I'm like singling somebody out, and I'll never give the name. One of my competitors has this wonderful testimonial that's written about him that, you know, I've had the opportunity to speak with them. His reputation like really precedes him and everything else. So I know it must be true, but not everybody knows this person the way I do. And it just reeks of BS because, you know, it says these wonderful things about him. And then at the end, it doesn't even have a name. It says something like sales rep in the pharmaceutical industry. So I'm like, I'm thinking, like, what does that narrow it down to? I mean, like, I don't know, 700,000, 800,000. How many reps are there in pharmaceuticals? I mean, am I going to say, oh, yeah, I think I know who he's talking about. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like, you know, something this person would say. I mean, so the person really is kind of doing themselves a disservice. So that's the first thing. I really believe if you're going to use a testimonial, you put it out there loud and proud. If you want to see what I'm talking about when it comes to testimonials, if you go to my website at yoursalesplaybook.com and you look at the different tabs that run along the top, there's one for services. And if you go on there, you'll see that there's all different services of mine and that there are testimonials. Look at the testimonials and you'll see that I truly practice what I preach there. And, you know, people are like saying what they're saying and there's actual legitimate names there. And I even put their company name and I'm hoping that you guys will call my bluff and go and like look this person up on LinkedIn and reach out to them or whatever, because I want you to trust me. I want to be your sales trainer. I want to be your sales coach. So I don't mind putting it out there. Now, before I get to some fresh material on this one that I've never really shared before, I do want to put something to rest. There's a lot of you who will not put a name with a testimonial because you're afraid that somehow if it gets in the hands of your competitors or whatever it is, you know, somehow they're going to sweep your client off their feet. And my position on this has been the same since, like, I opened my doors in 2011. And it's as follows. If you're my customer and I've got to worry about somebody sweeping you off their feet because you have your name on a testimonial that I'm sharing with other people, I think I've got a bigger issue with you. I think I've got to, like, get back to basics with you and serve you at a much better level. I am very, very confident in the relationships that I have with my clients. And I would rather have complete transparency than fuel something, you know, like distrust that exists with salespeople. So I need every bit of ammunition possible to help, again, eliminate doubt and skepticism and objections, or even worse yet, somebody just like sitting on the fence, right? And just keep embracing the status quo. So now, as far as fresh material with the testimonials, again, the context here is that we want to expedite our deals. So we need to establish trust and kind of get them away from this whole, I don't trust this person, or I don't trust salespeople in general. And that might be what's holding up the deal. So when you're providing testimonials, I think many of us do a really good job in providing testimonials that talk about the widget. Talk, you know, the X1000 series, or talk about the company. They might even, talk about service or something like that. But where a lot of salespeople fail is that they're not being mentioned specifically in the testimonials. So when you're asking for testimonials from your clients, and you should be, when you're asking for those testimonials, make sure that, you know, you coach them a little bit and say that, you know, listen, if you're comfortable talking about both, you know, the ROI, or, you know, the, you know, how this addressed this problem that you were having, or, you know, our service or whatever it is, you know, I'd also appreciate it, since I'm also the account manager on this deal, or, you know, maybe some kind of words mentioning, you know, how it was to work with me to get this set up. I'd really appreciate that. And because it's important that you are mentioned in there too. You know, it's a funny thing, and I'm going to address this one in a second. There are these salesisms and these adages that we've all heard in sales a million times, and we nod our heads, but many times, like, we think we really know what it means, but it doesn't. They're like, but we're really not embracing it or whatever. It's just a cool thing that we all agree on. You know, like, you know, you have to provide value. Okay, great. What does that mean? I don't know. It just sounds cool. And, you know, you have to be a trusted advisor. Awesome. How do you do that? I don't know, but it sounds good. People do business with people they know, like, and trust. You know, all those things are like, you know, what's it, that Zig Ziglar thing, which I love, by the way. You know, you can get whatever it is you want if you help enough other people get what they want. That's what I'm talking about. There's a lot of things like that, but there's another one that's in there that I think represents an opportunity that we're not jumping all over, especially knowing that there's a trust issue. And there was this thing that, like, we used to say, like, because I'm at sales now 35 years. This past summer, by the way, was my 35th anniversary in sales. I got into it, like, right out of high school. And there is this old adage that goes, people buy you first. They buy you before the widget and the company and everything else. And whenever, like, if that's one of those statements that you make and you're guaranteed to get head nods in the audience, if you're, you know, a motivational speaker and you say that, you're going to get, like, you know, all the harumps in the crowd, you know, like, people, like, real, like, it get, like, people agree with it. It's a safe, awesome thing to say. But now, what are we doing about that? If we all agree that people buy you and me before the company and the widget and all the bells and whistles and features and benefits, what are we doing about it? So one of the things that we have to do is make sure in the testimonials that there's something there that vouches for you. And, you know, one little thing that you can jot down, of course, if you're not driving right now, you know, right now we're talking about different ways to use evidence, right, to expedite the deal by reducing and or eliminating doubt and skepticism and hopefully objections. One of the things that we have to realize is that, you know, people need to be able to trust us. So in order to do that, what we want to do is show them kind of like forms of evidence that answer the following question that you could jot down. Who says so besides yourself? Who says so besides yourself? And, you know, that's not going to just basically point you toward a testimonial. That might also point you to a study. Well, I'll tell you who else says so besides your Uncle Paul here. You know, how about the Society of Human Resource Managers? How about New York City research firm Basics? How about, you know, industrial thought leader Bradley, you know, I'm going to stop myself because, you know, I don't know if you noticed today. Come on, I want you guys to notice this. I'm 20 minutes in and I didn't curse at all. And I almost went down a very dark road and almost gave the person like a porn name. So, you know, I exercised restraint there. And I did say I'm a work in progress, so I'm going to leave it. I'm going to leave that one at that. And, you know, maybe later on when I get together with my friends, I'm going to tell them what I was going to say to you guys, because that's a safer crowd, man. I don't want to get like an email from you guys. Oh, my God, your language was horrendous or whatever, as if that would be a shock. So the next thing really, in a way, underscores that thought that I just said, how people buy us first. And, you know, I want, and part of this is kind of a reinforcement of something I've said all along, but now I want to give you some areas where you can zero in on it. If people buy you first, then one of the things that you should be doing is supplying your bio throughout the sales cycle. And I have three opportunities that you should be thinking about to provide your bio. And I don't mean either or here. I mean, ideally, all three of them that you do this. So the very first opportunity that you have to supply your bio would be, we call it a pre-appointment kit. When you set up an appointment with a potential client, I always set it up so that there's enough time for me to FedEx them a pre-appointment kit. Now, I'm not going to tell you everything that's in that kit, because that's actually is something that I share in my courses, particularly one that you're going to be able to download, and I'll give the information at the end of this. You know, I can't give it all away for free, folks, but I could do a damn good job of giving you a lot of it for free. So the first opportunity is in a pre-appointment kit. So the purpose of a pre-appointment kit is to get them excited about the meeting that you have with them coming up, right? And if they're excited, then I think that's going to help, you know, help them to actually show up and not be a no-show or anything like that. But also, too, part of the purpose here is to start establishing your authority and your credibility. And the bio is a great way to do that. So unless you have very little experience, I recommend that you do this. So let's just say you have a few years experience in your industry. Create a bio sheet. Put your picture on it. The picture is very, very important, because it's going to, before you ever get there, give them a feel between that and your background right in front of them, that they kind of know you. Your reputation is going to precede you. So you send this along to them. That's the first opportunity. Now, just as a side note, and combining some of these things that we just talked about, prior to this, I mentioned to you about using testimonials. Leave room on your bio sheet to have a few of your testimonials. Because you remember I said, if you guys remember, you remember I said before that, you know, we want to answer the question, who says so besides yourself? So if I'm laying it out there that I have this experience, I really want to answer it for you. Like, okay, well, that's you telling your story, Castain. You know, who really cares about your experience? Well, these people right here who are now validating what I've just basically laid out here. Because experience is meaningless if you're not bringing results to people. And I bring results to my clients, and I'm sure you guys do too. So I don't want you to be bashful about it. So imagine this arrives before you even get there. Now, I'm not going to tell you what else is in the kit, but I do want to put this out there to you. And I'll use a bad joke that I've used here numerous times. Do you really think they're going to receive this from you? and say, oh, wow, this is cute. Person sent me a bio and some other things here. Let's just go ahead and put it in the pile of all the other pre-appointment kits that I always get when a sales rep comes here. I am willing to bet that you will be damn near the only person who ever did this. So if we know that people buy us first, and part of what we should be doing here in sales is standing apart from all the other people out there, imagine beginning a relationship from the point of view that you are different and you have demonstrated a difference. That is very, very powerful. That is the first opportunity to provide your bio. The second one is also going to help you stand out. And it goes in the proposal that you generate. Most sales reps would never, ever, ever put their own bio in there because they're talking about the company and the history of the company and their solutions and the pricing and, you know, all the little details in there and executive summaries and all these things, right? Put your bio in there because part of what they're buying is you. And again, at the bottom of that bio, put some testimonials. Now, if you've sent them a pre-appointment package, might be an opportunity to have a few additional testimonials out of this. They could say, oh, wow, man, this is like three fresh testimonials here. This guy Castain really is wowing a lot of people. So you put that in there. And also, too, when it comes down to the decision and they're looking through proposals, wouldn't it be nice to have them, like, have that recollection where they see your visual, having your picture on the bio? They're like, oh, yeah, that's Castain. He was in there. He's a nice guy, and he had great ideas, and he really, like, challenged us with our thinking, and he was, you know, sending resources and educating us on how to make the right decision. That's what we want. But also, I also want people to, when they're weighing out the financial part of this and the program that I'm putting forth, I want them to understand that they have somebody, in my case, who has 35 years of trench warfare under his belt. Same thing with you. And no, you don't have to have 35 years of experience to do that, man. You have a few years of experience. You should be flaunting that, okay? The final opportunity for you to be able to provide your bio is kind of an indirect way of providing your bio, but it's a bio nonetheless. Send them a LinkedIn invitation. A LinkedIn invitation. Now, if you're not already connected with somebody and they agree to have the appointment with you, okay, so you've set the appointment, you send them a pre-appointment package. Boom. That's opportunity number one for you to start establishing your authority. People get a visual representation of you. And one little thing about the visual thing, I always tell people, if I can slap my ugly ass on that bio, you can too. All right, because I'm not going to be winning any beauty contests, but you know what? It's very, very important that people understand that there is a person at the other end, that this is going to be a human relationship. They're not going to be client number, you know, 1,937-D. So now they have that. Now what I do after we've met for the first time is I send a LinkedIn invitation. Now I do that for a lot of reasons. That's also like, you know, kind of an insurance policy in a way. Why? Because if for some reason I get ghosted or for some reason things fall through or whatever it is, we've got another place where we can bump into each other. And I also know that buyers are buying differently than they have in the past. A lot of people, and you guys are no different, even though you're in sales, we like to observe people from a safe distance and we like to see what they're all about. So connecting with them on LinkedIn gives them another opportunity to watch me safely and from a distance and anonymously. But what does it also do? What's right there on my LinkedIn profile, my background, and my bio? So it gives them another opportunity. And what's really cool about it, and you know, I'm certainly not going to quit my day job to become a writer or anything like that. Not with the, you know, the grammatical butchering of the English language that I'm guilty of. I on my LinkedIn profile, I actually tell a story of how I got into sales and stuff there. So I'm trying to give like a little bit of a different experience. If you go to my website and you check out the About Me tab, you'll see that I tell a story, including some things letting you know me personally and talking about some struggles I had and, you know, what really motivated me to become a sales trainer. And before anybody says the money, and I won't go into the whole story, it was actually my dad. And it was my dad seeing kind of the light in me long before I knew it existed. I fought him on that stuff. I wanted to be a musician. I didn't even want to go to college. And when I pushed back and everything else, next thing you know, I'm working for him. Because in my family, you didn't just go to college. You had to work your way through it. And you had to have a job and pay your expenses. And I kind of got into sales that way. But I always appreciated the fact that somebody believed in me long before I believed in myself. And that is why I truly enjoy training other people. And I've had the unique privilege of doing that now for 20,000 people that have been through my courses and programs and keynote speeches. So telling people stories are very, very important, not just for a keynote speaker like me or a sales trainer like me or a thought leader, but it's important for you too. Because believe it or not, when we talked about all the different forms of evidence, one of the most powerful forms of evidence is the use of stories. So maybe give some thought to that as well. So those are the three opportunities that you can use to provide your bio. The other thing that you can do is, and I'm going to cut it short on this one because I wanted to keep this a shorter podcast today, is it is very, very important that you use repetition throughout your entire sales cycle. It's very important that you use repetition throughout your entire sales cycle. I think many of us today, we know that the world is busier than ever. We know that attention spans are shorter than ever. But again, it's one of those things that we nod our head to. We're not going to, nobody's really going to disagree with that statement. And when you're living in this world that is so distracted and short attention spans, you cannot sit there and think that people will hear something once from you and get it. Now, we're not saying people are stupid. I'm saying that they're preoccupied. I am. You are. I mean, we're in a multitasking world. So I cannot go through a sales cycle thinking that you're going to get every single point that I'm making the first time. So what you want to do is you want to repeat things throughout the entire sales cycle, like different forms of evidence that we talked about, including other forms of evidence that I didn't share here today that I'm actually going to be sharing in a download for you guys. Your selling points, how your solutions will like solve their headaches and even help them like embrace opportunities. So, but even your qualities, because remember, people buy you first. So you need repetition to solidify this. In fact, again, if you're not driving, I'd love for you to write down this kind of Uncle Paulism. It's something I've been sharing with you guys since the beginning of time. If you've heard me say it before, I'm hoping maybe today is the day that the light bulb will go off and you'll really own it. And it's very simple. Whatever you say and do repeatedly and consistently gets associated with you. Repetition, therefore, is the mother of brand. So whatever you say repeatedly and consistently over time becomes associated with you. Repetition, therefore, becomes the mother of brand. So before I give you a few final thoughts, I just want to say, I mean, think about that. I mean, you know, like, I'll give you like a negative side of it. If every time you bumped into me somewhere, like on LinkedIn or maybe my messaging that I sent to you or on my podcast, I was always complaining, you probably think, you know, I'm just somebody who's negative. And by the way, haven't you seen that on some of your social channels, like some of the people on Facebook? And this is not a problem with Facebook, it's just people in general. You know, they always have a crisis and they're always complaining about this and life sucks. And on LinkedIn, sometimes we see people where, you know, they're always complaining and life sucks. Also, too, on the social media channels, I'll see people, they're always talking politics. So what do I associate them with? Well, I mean, in some cases, a pain in the ass because I don't, like, agree with their political views. But in other cases, I'm like, all right, so this person's all about politics. I have no idea what they sell, and I nor will I, because I kind of lost them at that. Or maybe other people who are just always like putting their religious beliefs out there. But that's on the social channels. People are judging us outside of the social channels too, and during the sales cycle. So it could be things like how trustworthy you are, things like making promises and keeping the promises, things like, you know, following through and all that or whatever. So I guess what I would leave you with is that people are always judging you. So what you want to do is you want to use repetition to have them arrive at a favorable judgment. So I want you to think about, what are some of the qualities that you want to make sure that people really understand about you? What are some of the things, like as far as evidence, that you really want to get out there repeatedly? What are some of the things in terms of selling points that you want to get out there repeatedly? And all of these things that I just mentioned, we put this under the umbrella of a technique that actually comes from improvisation in the music world. And thank God, man, your Uncle Paul here has been a guitarist of pushing 40 years, man, 39 years now, whatever the heck it is. 30? No, I'm not pushing. Well, it's kind of pushing 40 years, man. 37 years I've been playing guitar. And we call it theme and variation. And you could actually like take a lesson from the music world and bring it over into sales here. You think about different themes or a theme, and then you think of different ways to vary it. So let's just say one of the themes that you have is the fact that your widget saves time. So now what you want to think about, okay, how many different ways can I vary that theme of saving time through our widget? How many different ways can I say that? How many different ways can I prove that? Can I use a testimonial? Could I do like a video interview with somebody? Could I do a video demonstration or have them come to our facility or go to their facility and demonstrate it? Could I give them an example? Could I give them a case study? Could I use some kind of a cool analogy or a funny story to help bring the point home, right? So the theme, saving time. The variation, all the different ways that we want to hammer that point home. So that's what I have for you. But I really want to ask you guys a favor, if you don't mind. I hope I'm allowed to. The favor is this. Actually, two favors. First favor, if you found value in the podcast, would you simply pass it along to your boss or a friend or, you know, someone that hopefully would find value in this also? That's number one. Number two, if you found value in this, I want you to consider downloading my Closers Academy program. This is something that I offered back in June, and it was a brand new product for us. And it was like right out of the gate, man, we had a tremendous amount of interest, and a lot of people attended this. A lot of companies put their entire sales team through the program, and I wasn't going to offer it again until next year in 2019. And then I said, you know what? I really need some time to do some other stuff, so I'm not going to be able to offer a live webinar right now. I usually offer a new live webinar every 2 weeks, and I just don't have the time right now because I have to clear up some things. But I decided, you know what? Let me get that out there, the Closers Academy program as a download. So very, very quickly, let me take you through it. It's two sessions that you can go completely at your own pace. So it's not like, you know what I mean, like a regimented schedule. You've got to attend at this time between these hours. You download it and you just go through it whenever you want. You can go through it in bite-sized pieces. I won't tell anyone. You can go through it multiple times. And we're going to start by talking about the one question that you need to ask as you set an appointment, because a lot of people don't realize that the close in a sale actually starts long before the formality of asking for the business. So we need to, it's really like a positioning type of thing that we have. We really have to position ourselves as trustworthy and knowledgeable and demonstrate that expertise. And it all starts the minute you set that appointment. Then we're going to talk about that pre-appointment packet. I'm hoping you guys like we're like, oh, wow, that's something cool. I want to try it. Well, there's other components to it, another three or four things you should include in the packet, right? I mean, I didn't say just send a bio. I said it's part of a packet. So we'll talk about what those components are and what the whole, like, you know, like strategy is here that we're embracing. We're going to talk about, once you're having your meeting, how you can take immediate control in terms of like what to say. And I actually have a really cool template that I'm going to send you guys that you can use. And whenever I send templates, I send them as Word docs because I actually encourage you to make it your own. I'm not big on scripts. I'm really big on a guideline, and then you make it your own to reflect your personality and selling style. We're going to talk about 12 tactics to safeguard your deal. And again, with that focus on how we can kind of get ahead of obstacles and stalls and objections and, you know, skepticism and doubt and things like that. We're going to talk about 5 types of questions. And you'll be happy to know, I'm not going to be talking to you guys about any of that. Ask open-ended questions and close probes. I mean, seriously, I don't think you need to take a course for that. I think you can go on Google and probably have a bigger problem of sifting through 200 million results for that. So you don't need to pay me to give you that. And I think if you're like me, you've heard that way too many times already. So I actually have 5 types of questions that I use that are going to take you beyond it. It's really not a questioning 101 type of approach that I take to it, a little more advanced. And as if that weren't enough, I'm going to be sending you guys a PDF with 100 sample sales questions to give you guys ideas and to see the techniques demonstrated that I'm sharing. We're going to talk about how you can disqualify your competitors without bad-mouthing or being professional. You're allowed to disqualify, by the way. There's nothing wrong in doing that, as long as you do it in a way that isn't sleazy or whatever. We're also going to talk about 3 things to include in your proposals that your competitors aren't going to like include. So there's a lot more to this. And instead of going on and on and on, that was about half of the things right there. There's a lot more. If you'd like to learn more, I want you to go to yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. But I want to tell you something. This is one you're going to need to, like, you know, I know some of you guys, you like to wait till the last minute. And then what happens? You forget. So I want you to know that come September 27th, this is history. We're not going to be offering it again this year. I don't know when next year I'm going to offer it, if I'm going to offer it. We have a really full, aggressive webinar schedule next year. But again, if you want in on this, go to yoursalesplaybook.com/closemore. You can download it instantly, but come September 27th, this is going to be history. So with that, I'm Paul Castain from yoursalesplaybook.com. I am wishing you an incredible week ahead. Go get them. The Sales Playbook Podcast is a Castain Training Systems production. Come visit our blog at www.yoursalesplaybook.com/blog.